This week on the Drag Scene Podcast, we talked to Jordan Vandegrift about what's going on with his NHRA racing, what it was like to step up from alcohol to top fuel, and a whole lot more. So pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beans. The Drag Scene Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Scene Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, Jordan Vandegrift stops by to talk about kind of a wide range of topics when it comes to fuel racing and everything else. So it's definitely kind of wild to hear his take on stuff and what it was like to get into the sport and what it's like to jump into a top fueler for the first time. So without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Drag Scene Podcast is Jordan Vandegrift. What's going on, Jordan?
Hey, nothing much. Just driving back to Indianapolis, actually, in my truck. And I thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. No problem at all. Yeah, it's that magical time of year when we all convene to the lovely balmy weather of Indianapolis in December to check out PRI, right?
Yeah, it's really a gorgeous time of year in Indianapolis. I came from I was in California for a few months. I'm originally from there. I was down there after Pomona, obviously. So coming back to Indy, you know, it's great. It's great. I love it this time of year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I remember a couple years ago when it was, you know, probably, God, it was like 5 degrees, 5 below. And all of the California people from our company were, they weren't having that at all. They were not about it.
Yeah. It's definitely an adjustment, but you know, it's a good adjustment. You know, you don't get it in California. You don't get that cold ever. So it's nice to, you know, kind of have it somewhere and experience it.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, great way to describe it. It's a great experience, but it's rough to live in. Being in Ohio, I'm kind of used to it. So, you know, I get a full, you know, during racing season, I get exposed to, think, pretty much every level of elements known to man. So, you know, it's old hat to me, but it's definitely not enjoyable to be that cold.
Yeah. It's definitely a new experience for me.
Speaking of new experiences, you just completed your rookie year of top fuel racing, and you know, how would you kind of rate your year? You know, talk about that. You know, let people know, our listeners know, what it's like to kind of go through a rookie year in top fuel racing.
Yeah, you know what, now that it's over, I mean, I've had some time to reflect on the whole year and the fact that, you know, basically flew by, you know, before I knew it was already over. But based on how it went, I mean, I think it went really good. I mean, obviously I'd like to run more races. I mean, I only got 11 in my rookie year, but that was plenty for me. I mean, it was just about getting experience and feeling it out, you know. And but we, right in the year, I mean, I think we did really good. My team, I mean, we're arguably the best part-time team out there with along with Billy Torrance. So I knew coming into it that we had high expectations. I had high expectations for myself, and rating myself, I think I did pretty good. I think I held my own. I mean, I got out there, and as a guy with little to no experience, I think I proved myself, and I think I gained the respect of a lot of my competitors. So looking back on it, it was a good year. I had a lot of fun. I mean, that's the most important thing, is to go out there and have fun. I think sometimes you lose sight in that, and the business kind of takes over. But I'm just a kid who got to live out his dream, and I look forward to doing it for years to come.
You know, what's it like kind of, you know, jumping into the fryer that is, you know, NHRA top fuel racing? You know, what's something that might shock people, that kind of how your race weekend goes?
You know, it's just, it's the combination of everything, really. I mean, the fact that, you know, you got to work. I mean, I go to the track in the morning with the guys, and you know, I have a list of things to do and get ready. And then, you know, you have fan interactions with which I love, which, you know, before you really get experienced with it, you don't really know, but talking to the fans is one of the most enjoyable things I do at the racetrack. And then, you know, getting ready to run is really, it's eye-opening, you know. It's, you push the car out, you know, you drive it up there, and that's when really the whole sense of getting ready, I think, surprised me the most. It was like, you know, counting the pairs in front of you. You know, when do I need to put my helmet on? When do I need to start getting ready? To time it perfectly, so I'm not in the car too long, but I'm not rushing you to the starting line. So that was really surprising. And then just the fact of getting yourself ready. I mean, the nerves, calming your nerves and focusing on the task at hand is really the most important thing. Once you're in there, and I noticed when you're the next car, when you're in the staging lanes, you're the next car on the track, you watch the pair in front of you go. That's when you really either calm down, whichever feeling you need, whether it's qualifying, whether it's the first round or the final round, you really have to work on getting yourself into the same position every time.
You know, that's definitely an interesting take on it, because it's hard for probably a lot of people to imagine what it's like going from racing, you know, any kind of other race car and then jumping into a top fueler, because, you know, complacency kills in any form of racing, and with something that's, you know, breathing nitro, it takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like nitro racing. I mean, these things are the fastest accelerating cars on the planet. So, and they're also one of the loudest. I would attest to that. So, getting in one of them is very, it's just surprising. But I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot of fun. It gets the adrenaline pumping, and I wish everybody could experience it. I know that, I'm very, I'm in a lucky, I had a lucky, draw, and I'm taking advantage of this opportunity, and then I'm enjoying it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned loud. You know, being trackside, shooting pictures, being around the cars, you know, it gives me a different perspective on the sensory overload. What's it like to actually, you know, your first time getting in this car and they kick this thing over and fire it up? What was the first thing that popped to your mind? Do you remember?
Well, yeah, I remember. I mean, I could even trace it back to when I ran alcohol. I mean, because the alcohol car I ran on nitro as well. It was with Anthony Nocero. So I think the biggest thing is when it fires up, you don't realize how much it actually rattles you just sitting there. I mean, once that thing fires up, that thing is getting a little warm, and you're shitting in there, and the whole entire car is shaking a little bit. And even when you do the burnout, it's vibrating. It's just it's so much power that's staying under control during the burn, firing it up during the burnout, all that stuff. And then you're really just waiting to unleash it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you kind of mention it that way, because it's the feel that these cars get. And I always tell people, you got to go to a drag race. That's the biggest thing you got to understand, is it's awesome to watch on TV, but to experience in person. And fuel cars to me have this feeling of like a coiled snake. Even when they're just sitting there idling and they're doing the burnout, it's like they're winding up and they're ready to just absolutely smash something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like.
And, you know, as far as when you go to make that pass, I've heard a lot of drivers describe it that, you know, eventually everything starts to slow down and you get a better feel for it. You know, what's your experience driving one of these cars so far, as, you know, the feel of what it does and how it reacts and what you have to do?
That's 100% true. I mean, the first couple runs that I've had, I mean, you're behind the car. It's plain and simple. Like, the car moves faster than you can think. So, getting used to it and getting my first ever runs, you make moves a little too late. So you let the car get toward the center line, or you let the car get to the wall, and you're forced to make a bigger move toward the end of the track to correct yourself. And as you get more runs down the track, everything does slow down. It really does. Your brain can process what's going on a little quicker. And also, you drive by the seat of your pants, so you get that feel a little bit. You understand the feel a little bit more. So when it kicks out to the left and toward the center line, depending on what lane you're in, when it kicks toward the center line, you get the feel, and you can kind of correct it sooner. So the key is just to catch it as soon as possible, because the longer you take to catch it, you're down the track 400 more feet in half a second. So it's more important to catch it early, and you learn that as you get more runs. I think I have 50 runs now, around that in the nitro car, and I've got a pretty good feel for where I'm at, so I'm feeling confident going into next year.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch them. Do you study a lot of film of your runs? You know, look at like the broadcast and stuff like that.
I do when I get the chance to see it, but the most I really, I go over it with my uncle. Obviously my uncle Bob drove these things for 20 years, so he has a great understanding of every little feeling that you get in the race car. So really, my biggest thing is I'll make the run, I'll know what happens, I'll try to process it, and then I'll go to him right after the run, and I'll assess the situation. I'll tell him what I felt, and then he will tell me what to do or what to look for next time. So I have the luxury of him. A lot of people doing it, try to just learn on their own or watch their film, but I can go back to him, and he watched the run. He saw what happened. He knows what I'm thinking before I even go to him. So he's just a nice outlet, and he gives me a lot of advice, and I'm better because of him.
I can imagine it's wild watching these runs, you know, when you get to watch them on TV or, you know, NHRA All Access, because it just seems like, you know, the more experienced drivers kind of, they're not afraid to ride the lightning, if you will. And that car, you know, they drive it to the very edge, and then you see other guys that are like, I'll live to fight another day. Is there a point that you've ever been in the car so far where something started to happen? You're like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, it's happened. It happened a few times. I mean, I was a rookie, and I was inexperienced. And I remember a time in Gainesville where I hit the throttle and it washed out a little bit toward the wall, and I got scared, so I let off, and then I got back in, and it was a qualifying, and a total rookie move. But you know, I did what I had to do. I didn't know, so I came back and I talked about it, and I learned from my mistake, and I did it again a few times throughout the year, and I fixed it, but. The thing about driving these things is, you know, they're dangerous. You know, it's not it's safe. It really is, but they're also dangerous. I mean, you're trying to corral a 300 mile an hour car. So, you always, you know, you can let off anytime. There's always going to be another run. You know, you don't want to be out there and driving with like you stole it or something like that, but you want to be out there, you want to be under control, and you want to realize to pick and choose your battles. You know, if you can, once you get the feel for it, you can understand what you can do and what you can't do. And that's what I try to do. So, I always live, you know, even if it's race day, you know what, you want to be able to have another run. So, you know, get out of it if you don't feel safe. And that's how I drive.
And I think that's a very, very, very smart way to drive, because in any form of racing, the last thing you want to do is run out of talent and real estate.
That's 100% true. You don't, you know, you want to be able to make another run. That's my philosophy.
What's been the biggest adjustment from you, like the difference between going from the alcohol ranks to one of these cars?
The biggest adjustment. So the alcohol cars, it's honestly very similar. So, you know, the nitro, the top fuel car has a little more oomph to it. And it's, you know, all the way down track, it has a little more oomph to it, but the alcohol car is very comparable. I'd say the biggest thing, it's getting used to the back half of the track. So the alcohol car, you go 0 to 220 to half track, but then you only go 220 to 270 from half track to the finish line. So the acceleration really slows down in an alcohol car, and you can feel that. It actually feels like it lays over, like you almost sit up toward the end of the track. In the nitro car, you never get that feeling of catching up or sitting up, or it's just pulling you all the way through. And so the biggest adjustment I had to make was getting used to the acceleration all the way down 1,000 feet. So that's turning when it's still accelerating, because in the alcohol car, when it lays over, you can kind of make moves, you know, more comfortably. In the nitro car, you're driving that thing from the start to the finish. So that's the biggest adjustment. And I will say, I mean, it's a lot more fun. The nitro car fast is fun. So I have a good time.
Oh yeah, I could imagine it. You know, I'm more power to you guys. Everybody, I have a lot of friends ask me that aren't in the racing industry, and they'll see, you know, top fuel, where you're like, would you ever want to drive a nitro car? I pause for a second, just for the simple fact that the level of insanity that those cars produce for me, that's kind of outside my level. Now, I'm an idiot, and I jump behind, you know, the wheel of a pro mod at instant. There's a lot of people that think that's crazy, but just...
That is crazy, by the way. That is crazy. Those things are nuts.
Yeah, it's... They I think Bill Bader put it the best. They're the most ill-handling, ill-tempered race cars on the planet. They're angry all the time.
They are. And they're, you know, those things are hard to drive, too, you know? I mean... I couldn't imagine. People have asked me if I drive a pro mod. I think I would, just because of how cool I think they are. But I also think, you know, I got to be a better driver before I step behind one of those things.
Yeah, they it's a different kind of, you know, feel, I think, on how they operate. And Alex Laughlin has talked about that before, that in a turbo pro mod, there's two launches. There's the one when the tree drops, and then there's about eighth mile when those turbos are fully wound up and it goes into full ludicrous mode out the back door.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine that. I mean, I couldn't imagine driving a door car that fast. Those things are, you know, they fascinate me for sure. And I respect, you know, Alex Laughlin a lot. That guy can drive anything. So, obviously, I wouldn't rule it out. If somebody wants to let me drive their pro mod, I mean, I'll give it a shot.
Are you the kind of driver that if someone, you know, jingles a treat box and throws it into some race car, you'd be like, all right, what are we doing this week, guys? You just jump in and roll?
Yeah, well, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, I'm about having fun, like I said earlier. I mean, why not? This racing for me is fun, and I don't want to lose sight of that. So why not? Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see different drivers' takes on that, because there's people that are like, they're specialists. They only want to do one thing and one thing only and perfect it. And then you get the people that have that attitude like you have, where it's like, hey, has it got wheels and a steering wheel? Jump in it. You know, how's this thing work? And they roll with it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what makes, you know, and you become a better driver that way too. I mean, if you can master all different kinds of vehicles and speeds and stuff, I mean, I think it can only help you in the long run.
So, you know, kind of going off of that, do you follow much like the small tire, the outlaw racing at all?
I don't. I wish I did more, to tell you the truth. I've been pretty, you know, preoccupied with our whole deal and what I've been doing lately. So I'd love to make it. I've never been out to one of those races before, but obviously I'd love to attend one and really get into it and meet a lot of those guys.
Right on, yeah. It's interesting when you go to some of these events and you'll see, you see people like Bo Buntner that's been to no prep races. You know, Alex been to all these different races, and you know, Lee has been to some of these races, that they kind of get to go and almost be a fan and actually enjoy it just as much, because they're not there to race. They just get to see all the cool stuff they normally don't get to see.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go. If anyone wants to go with me, hit me up. Let's go.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm sure there's plenty of people that would, hit you up on that for sure, and want, just come and hang out. Because racers, like, as a racer, I like to hang out with racers, and it doesn't matter what it is. I like to just go and, check it out.
The racer fam is a family, you know what I mean? And if you're into racing, any kind of thing, I mean, you have friends for life. So that's what I've noticed too, getting involved. Obviously, this is my rookie year and all that stuff, but I've noticed that the fans and anybody within racing, you know, it's a tight-knit group, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Kind of speaking of, going off the tight-knit group thing, and being when you're on the road a lot, you have your crew, your crew chief and whatnot, and kind of with your situation's a little bit interesting, because they all kind of fly in and do that whole deal versus spending the entire race week at a shop or something like that, right?
Yeah, you know, us at Bob Vandegrift Racing, I mean, we do things a little differently because, you know, at times we're forced to, and at times it's because we think it's the best idea. So, yeah, what we do is a little different. So most teams, you know, most full-time teams, they have a full-time crew. They pay eight or nine guys, you know, they all work at the shop. They all travel together and they get everything ready throughout the race here. Well, you know, us, right now we're running a limited schedule and we don't need as much help, but we do need more time between races. So, what we do is we have a few guys at the shop, myself included, and we get everything ready in between the races. And then as for help, when we go to the track, we fly in a lot of our guys, a lot of part-time guys who used to be full-time guys, but they just can't do it anymore simply because they have families or they have other full-time jobs that they go to, and they still want the thrill and the fun of racing on the weekends. So we get the I truly believe that we have the best of the best part-time guys that just can't be out full-time anymore. Guys like Matt Madden, guys like Dave Gatterall, guys like Chris McNitro, he's a legend around the pits, and Phil Hartman, guys like that, Doug Wilson, Scott Teasing, and Ryan Wirth, and John Ferguson. That's all my guys right there. So I couldn't ask for anything better. They love it. They get a pretty good gig. They fly in, they fly out. It's really cool what we do. And I think we've set an example for other teams. I think you can see a lot more of that happening in the future. I think that's the way that this sport's going to go.
Yeah, because the sheer cost of racing at any level is pretty huge, and with nitro cars, it's I've heard figures thrown around on what it takes, and it melts my mind. And do you think it gives you guys an advantage being a part-time team like that in some senses, because your guys aren't necessarily, they're not burnt out, it's fresh, it's ready, it's fun every time they go to the track. Do you think that kind of helps you guys?
100%. I mean, our guys come ready, but I'm not saying that the other guys are burnt out. The main difference is, I would say that our parts are ready. So say when you do these three or four in a row, when you get to the fourth one, your parts, you know, have taken a beating because you haven't had time to get some new stuff in or assemble new things. You've had to use what you've been using. So with us, you know, if it's a four race swing, we'll go to maybe two of them, you know, and take the two races off in between and make sure our stuff is ready to go. And it gives our guys a break. You know, they go home back to their wives and their children and their jobs, and they work the regular job, and they fly back in the next weekend and help us out again. So it gives us an advantage, you know, if we were running full time, maybe it wouldn't be an advantage. Maybe we would have to go back to how the other guys do it. But that is a task that I, or a challenge that I would like to take on, obviously. I mean, I want to be out there full time, and we've been in talks with some companies, so we'll see what happens next year. But obviously my end goal is to be out there full time.
Yeah. And you know, with the whole parts thing, it's again, that's another thing the drag racing nerd of me loves to check out and kind of see how different teams operate. And when you get to the nuts and bolts of it, you know, there's dirt track racing. Those guys run back to back to back quite often. And with drag racing, you get the 3 and 4 in a row. It's something similar. I don't think a lot of fans understand the level of beating that your equipment takes and what you have to be able to do as a team, because you could be out, you know, on the West Coast swing and something breaks that the car's not going back to the shop. You got to figure out how to fix it right then and there.
And you're right. Yeah. I mean, the beating that our parts take is enormous. You know, it's 11,000 horsepower, you know, you're putting into this thing, and, you know, these parts, as strong as they are and as strong as they've been made, you know, they can't handle 11,000 horsepower sometimes. So yeah, you go through a lot of parts, surprisingly a lot of parts. That's what people don't understand is, you know, you might throw a rack in there, rods and pistons. Well, they might not make it out, you know, and they might not make it out a few runs over the weekend. So your inventory can take a hit, and that's the struggle on those, you know, long, you know, the 4 in a row is, and that stuff's not cheap either. So you can go out and you could be fine, but if you hurt a few blocks or you throw away a few racks, you could be hurting later in that 4 in a row.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't matter how, you know, safe and conservative that you're playing it. Again, like you said, 11,000 horsepower, it's something mechanical. Things are going to fail. Even if, no matter how well you try to plan, you never know when, you know, a metal fatigue issue, freak accident like that, and all of a sudden, you know, you're sending, you know, rotating assembly parts in a low orbit.
Well, and that's what people don't understand too. I mean, you mentioned, you know, no matter how easy you can take it, well, that's the thing. So you're trying to make the perfect combo happen, because if you go too hard, sure, you might blow up. Well, guess what? If you try to be too conservative and go too soft, it might blow up too.
Oh, so yeah.
It's a fine line of it's just a fine line between too much and too little that you're always trying to hit. And it's really tough to get out of a weekend without going too high or too little. So we do a really good job at that. My crew chief, Ron Douglas, is, I think, one of the best out there as well, along with my crew. So we've been okay. We've managed to get through a couple years now with minimal damage. And so I think we can keep that rolling for next year too.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I've come to realize and learn that I never even thought of before, you know, when I first got into the sport, you know, growing up around it, is that there's a certain level that you have to really push a high horsepower vehicle hard in some aspects, because going too light on them can honestly cause more damage than what you think.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you get it wrong a little bit, and it's, you know, the car shakes, shaking can tear up a lot of stuff too. So, it's definitely, you know, I mean, these guys are the best in the business and they figure it out. So I just get in the thing and drive it and see what happens.
I never understood how bad tire shake could be on a vehicle till I've seen some pro mod teams that have shook so hard that they've actually had to do like chassis repairs to like the back half of the car in the pits, because it literally will shake bars out of cars.
It shakes my head pretty good too, I'll tell you that. I mean, it doesn't only I think about it. I mean, these pro mod guys are making chassis repairs. Well, top fuel cars shake pretty violently too. You know what I mean? I mean, they got a lot of power, and if you don't, if you don't get it and it shakes, I've had to take a few Advil or some aspirin after a couple of runs. I mean, it's nothing too crazy, but no, it'll definitely get your attention. And it's definitely a feeling. When I felt it for the first time, I was like, wow, that's what it feels like. And these things are no joke. So the cars always humble you. They've humbled me. Just when you think you have it, it'll shake you. It'll shake your brains out. And you go, okay, well, I got better start respecting this thing again.
Yeah. That's definitely a very interesting point. I've heard a few drivers kind of mention that in passing, that they've almost had to have dental work done after a violent case of tire shaking with these fuel cars, because it's just, it'll happen quick, and if you're not ready for it, or it happens in such a way that it's more powerful than what you expect, it'll quite literally shake your teeth out.
Not a will, and so you gotta be ready to catch it quickly, because if you stay in it too long, it'll give you a good little jolt there.
Yeah, it's definitely not the that's what you call adding insult to injury. It's a junk throwaway run, and now you have a massive headache because you've been feel like you've been thrown in a paint shaker.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, definitely not at all. And growing up around the sport with your uncle and stuff like that, kind of, what is one of the best, early memories you have from, going to the track?
You know, the best early memory that I've had, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. Nobody's asked me that. But the best early memory, I think it's just, it's going to the track and watching him do it. Obviously, I went to Pomona a lot growing up. I'm from Southern California originally, so I would always go to a Pomona race. And I just remember always, that time of year coming around in November and February that I was excited. I was excited to go to the racetrack, excited to see, the sights and the sounds and the smells. I was always infatuated with all that. And I always loved, I always loved, people. I would go back to school on Monday and people, they'd be like, "Hey, what'd you do this weekend?" I'd say, "I went to the drag races." They'd be like, "What's that?" And I always enjoyed, explaining to my friends and people I went to school with what it is and what it's like, and that my uncle did it. And I felt, special in a way. And I still feel that way now. Like, I want to be in a position where I can broaden this sport, because I think it's the coolest thing in the world. So I want to be able to get it in the faces of more people and kids especially, and grow this sport into something bigger and something what I think it should be.
That's a very, very interesting point you made there about growing the sport and getting it in front of people. And there's a lot of different takes and whatnot on that. What do you think from, your driver perspective, what do you think it's going to take to take the sport to the next level and really get it in front of all these people?
You know what? I mean, to tell you the truth, you got to get people out to the racetrack. I mean, whether that's, no matter how you do it, you just have to get people there, because once they come once, they're going to come back. They're going to start watching on TV. So, obviously, our sport is great in person. It's a little tough, it's hard to translate those sounds and the sights and the smells, through the TV. So I think, if you just can get people out to the racetrack, whether that be, and I hate to say, give out some free tickets to some veterans, or you give out to free tickets to kids a little older, maybe even 18 years old, go all the way up to 18 years old, to get people in and get people interested and see what it's like in person. I think they will become lifelong fans, and will tell more people about it and get more people to come out next year. So that's, in my opinion, I think it's just getting people out to the racetrack, giving them that experience, therefore they can share it with other people as well.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think if you want to take it a step further, is that you get the schools involved. You
100%.
get kids, you look back when you're in school, what's the one thing you love? You love the assemblies and field trips because it got you out of school, especially when it was something cool. So imagine, you do an assembly or a field trip for some of these kids and you're trying to get them in science, technology, math, stuff like that, and you do a presentation about a nitro car and you fire that thing up. And those young impressionable minds, they're going to see that and be like, all right, that's the greatest thing ever. Feed me more. I want to know more about it.
No, yeah, you're right about that. I mean, I think, obviously we do something great where the kids, 12 and under, get in free to our races. But I think, I mean, you could even up the age. I mean, I think anybody in high school, if you show a high school ID, I think you should be able to get in the race, and it will. And here's the thing about the older kids too, they're getting to the end of high school or whatever it is, and they're trying to look for something to do, in the future. And if they're interested in cars and they come out and they see what it's like, we can get a lot more interest in even, we can get a lot of kids wanting to be crew members, or kids wanting to own one of these cars or drive one of these cars, and get involved in the sport in other ways, or even be sportsman racers. Sportsman racing, without the sportsman racers, we're nothing. So sportsman's huge, and it's all across the nation. And so you get these kids to come out, especially when they're older. I mean, if they're 18 and they want to drive one of these things, they can get together with their buddies and build one. I think that the kids are important. Obviously, me being young, I'm 24 now, almost 25, but I would like to see a lot more kids my age get out there to the track. I understand that we have a lot of fans that are, they've been fans for a very long time, and I love them, but I think that we need the kids out there. The kids, it'll serve the sport well for years to come.
Well, and I think too, it plays into a double-edged you know, kind of soared for the schools and the racing, because, you know, schools are struggling with finding ways to keep kids interested. I grew up in a family of teachers and education. And one thing that my dad always did in his, you know, his math classes was he would find ways to grab kids' interest talking with math through racing. You know, and you have science teachers that would, you know, find different ways to do that through racing and motorsports. And it kind of gives it a real feel versus, you know, the old classic, probably, you know, Tim leaves on one train, it's going this speed, you know, Robbie's leaving on this train at this speed. When do they meet in the middle? Imagine some of the cool physics problems, especially or math problems with today's technology and the interactive level that you could do with drag racing. You know, it would be amazing, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think it would be something cool and different, and I think the kids would take to it for sure.
Yeah, kids, especially these days, like, you know, look at what they're into. You know, the technology, the flashy things, you know, iPads, cell phones, the whole deal. You got to find a way to tap into that, and I think drag racing is really missing the mark in certain aspects that we're not trying to find ways to get our hooks in those kids like that a lot more.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I will admit it is probably tough, but, you know, I think that's one of my goals here. I mean, I'm a young kid getting into the sport, and along with Austin Proc and Justin Ashley, and I think us three together, you know, we can tap into those kids and get them out. So I feel really optimistic about what's to come, and I think with the help of the NHRA and with the help of, you know, the YES program and junior drag racing and all that stuff, I think we can definitely get the kids out. That's what I look forward to.
To kind of even tie this up a little bit more, you know, in this conversation vein, you know, you mentioned the other two young drivers that you're hanging out with, and, you know, outlaw racing, you know, the younger demographic, and it all kind of ties into what the kids are into these days. And there's a certain feeling with some people that maybe the NHRA is, you know, and fuel racing has become, you know, it's too corporate at times, which I'm one of those people. I agree. Sometimes it's too corporate, but you got to do that to pay the sponsors. However, I think with some of you younger guys that there's a way to kind of heat up those fun, friendly rivalries a little bit more and make it interesting and tap into those people, like, you know, Stevie Fast and what those guys do to kind of, you know, ignite some younger fan and even older fan interest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the sport is corporate, but it has to be because, you know, it takes a lot of money. Takes a lot of money to run these cars, and the companies that invest, you know, get a lot out. They get good return on investment. So, yes, it is corporate, but it is for the better. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, me and Austin, you know, our rookie battle all year, I mean, it was fun. You know, like, we were kids out there, and we obviously had two sponsors backing us, him, Montana Brand, and I had DA Lubricants backing me. But at the end of the day, you know, we were out there having fun, and I think the fans picked up on that. And I think us two together really drew, you know, you got to pick a side, you know, and it brings the fun in racing again. You know, you come out to the track and see who wins, you know, me versus him. Like, some people are rooting for him to win, some people root for me to win. So I think we can bring that aspect of fun. You know, I know I'm going to say that a lot in this interview, but I'm here to have fun. I mean, I want to make drag racing fun, because that's what I'm having. I have a great time at the racetrack. I come out and I'm happy to be there any weekend. And I think that, you know, if you pin me and him against each other, which I feel like for our whole careers, it's going to be that way. I think it'll gain it just a lot like, you know, Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt Sr. were, you know, I mean, fans they picked a side. They either love Dale Sr. or they love Jeff Gordon, you know, the young kids. So it was good for NASCAR. And I think me and Austin can be good for drag racing.
Yeah. And I think, again, it ties into, you know, the with street outlaws. You know, it's very interesting to see different people's takes on that. And from what I've seen in my interactions with all of this is that those guys have done so much for the sport to drag people in and, you know, to bring that point home for me, at least going to these events and hearing, you know, just being a media person, sometimes you just observe and report. And you see a lot of people that talk about they've never been to a drag race before. They saw this on TV. They loved it. It came to town. I want to check them out because they can't go, you know, watch the tapings on the street. But they go to the No Prep Kings. And when you get someone like Ryan Martin doing a burnout and the crowd goes nuts. And, you know, Big Chief does his burnout. The crowd goes nuts and they cheer for him. And, you know, it's something like that what you guys could do could tie into that and drag those people from the Street Outlaws fandom into more of NHRA stuff. They're like, oh yeah, you know, I want to see Jordan, you know, kick the hell out of, you know, whoever, you know. That's what you need to tie into, I think.
Well, I mean, I've had ideas about this too as well. I mean, I could tell you, you know, NASCAR, you know, has an all-star race, right? You know, that's something different they do. They pick out a race and they have a little all-star race before. It's different meaning. Well, I think, you know, drag racing, the reason why Street Outlaws got so big, I mean, they're just grudge racing, you know? So what I think, I mean, we could maybe make turn one of our races into a grudge race, you know, and instead of the standard, you know, 1 versus 16, you know, we all go out there Friday, Saturday, we qualify like normal. Well, but instead of 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, I think one gets their first pick of anybody on the ladder. So if, you know, if I go out there, if I qualify number one and Austin's, you know, Austin's number five, I say, you know what, hey, I want him. And so it just goes down in that order. I think you get that feeling, that rivalry feeling, you know, you get that, it makes people want to come out and see who you're going to pick, you know, and who wants to race who and all that stuff and who wins ultimately. So that's an idea I've had, you know, it's just me thinking of things that probably, you know, aren't possible yet, but hopefully in the future they might be.
Oh, I would so be all over that. That needs to absolutely happen, just for the simple fact that there would, the level of insanity that could come from that would be amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, just think about, I mean, yeah, I mean, even the countdown maybe is a little too, there's a little too much riding on the countdown, but think about it. Maybe the race before Indy or, you know, you pick a race somewhere in the season, maybe in Vegas, you know, Vegas would be a good place to do this, but you know, you do a grudge race. You go out Friday and Saturday, you qualify 1 through 16. And then Sunday morning, everybody picks somebody, you know, you get one picks whoever they want, two picks whoever they want, and so on and so on. So I think that would draw a lot of attention and it'd be fun. It would be really fun to be a part of.
Oh, it'd break the norm for sure. And it'd make it interesting. And, you know, I think Joe Costello and I talked about something similar on his podcast about, you know, changing things up and making it wild, making it interesting. And, you know, when they were talking about doing, you know, when there was those rumbles of, oh, they might go run full quarter mile again, you know, maybe just do it for one special mega one-off Diamond P Motorsports presentation kind of race. That's just, there's no points on the line. It's let it all hang out. Let's put on a show. That would be the perfect thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I would be all for it. So sign me up. You know, I'm ready for it.
That would just bring back, you know, that would tie, I think, a lot of like the, you see a lot of people, all, you know, when they stop racing quarter mile wasn't the same, but it would make it awesome to see that, you know, you get to see John Force saying something crazy, driving through the lights on fire, giving some insane top end interview. It's those kind of moments that would really, I think, start to, it would do something awesome for the sport, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but at the same time, I mean, that does cost a lot of money at the same time too. So,
oh yeah,
me being on the other side as well, you have to think of it that way. And I've heard that's the only problem with going quarter mile again is these things are so tuned up to go 1,000 feet that if we were to run at the extra 300 feet, there might be, you know, it might be costly for us teams. But I mean, obviously, I'm all for it. If we could figure out a way to not make it blow up, I would be for it. I think, you know, I grew up watching quarter mile racing too, so. I would love to do that at least once in my career, maybe once a year, you know, that doesn't have to be a lot, but once a year, just like this grudge race idea I have, you know, just once a year, and make it a big thing for the fans and have fans come from everywhere to watch it.
Oh yeah. That's why I said, make it a non-points event, just something that total opt-in where you can go to it if you want to go, if you're not, it's not going to hurt you. And it would be interesting to see how a team's approach that and just make it a true, like, wide world of sports, make it a spectacle. Just something that you hype it up.
Yeah, just make it a shootout. Just make it a shootout. Anybody shows up, it's fair game.
It's like when you go to a dirt track race, they have the helmet dash or something like that where these guys, you know, they just let it rip. You know, you're just running for cash and pride. And that's when you see some of the, you know, the going to dirt track races and seeing some of these helmet dashes and stuff like that is when you see guys do stuff that just, it makes your jaw hit the floor. It's like, did he really just pull that pass off? Well, yeah, because you just threw, you know, an extra $2,000 out there and, you know, yeah, he wants that money.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're 100% right. I mean, I understand that it's probably, you know, I understand that it's probably tough to do right now, but I think their idea is worth looking at. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, totally. Anything you can do to take the sport in a different way and draw that viral attention in and start drawing more people in, because that's kind of what you have to do these days. And I think one of the smart things, I think what NHRA has done is how that they've kind of changed the run order and the schedule around, so you know when the pro cars are going to be out there. They stick to that schedule. And that helps from a fan's point of view, kind of putting the team and driver hat back on. How does that help you guys, knowing that you're kind of set on a certain schedule that you know you're going to run at a certain time? Does that really help you guys that much more?
Oh yeah, I mean it helps us a ton. I mean, going out there knowing that our two runs are here and here, we can plan better, you know. I mean, say we run at 2 and 5:30. Well, we know that, and so we have a certain amount of time to tear down and rebuild in between. And so for us, it's a luxury for us because we can take our time or we can't take our time. We just know what we have to do and when we have to do it, and we're up there ready. We're more prepared once we get up to the staging lanes.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's nice when you have that. Doing the Radial Tire Outlaw Racing when I crew for the guy I'm with, is that there's times where, they try to stick to a schedule, stuff happens, then it pretty much turns into a game of you're sitting in the trailer trying to come up with ways to entertain yourself, and you don't know what the conditions are going to be when you're up there, and that makes a huge difference at all levels of drag racing.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And you mentioned earlier about trying to you alluded to maybe racing more and doing the more to doing the whole full-time deal or whatnot. What's the sponsorship situation kind of been like, with this year with what you guys had going on and going forward?
You know, it's been surprising. I mean, obviously it's my first time dealing with something like this and sponsors and stuff like that, but it was good. I mean, we had DA Lubricants on for about 10 races last year, and they were great. But obviously they decided to opt out. And so now we're looking for sponsorship. We're looking for some money. And we've had some talks with multiple different companies, and I'm feeling pretty optimistic about it. But it's definitely interesting for sure. I mean, I'm going to be at PRI, talking to some people and see what happens. But I'm optimistic. I think we can make a deal happen. And I think we'll be out there, and I'll be out there next year running for sure.
And what's it, you see racers trying to always, you talk about sponsorships and whatnot, at a smaller level. What's it like at your level trying to convince someone to give you huge piles of cash to go race nitro cars? What's that process
Well,
like?
I mean, it's not easy to tell you the truth. I mean, we're asking for it takes a lot of money to run these nitro cars, right? So you're asking somebody for a lot of money, and you really have to do a lot of business to business deals. That's how a lot of these deals get done. And it has to work for both parties involved, or they see a lot of marketing value in it, which I believe that our sport does have a lot of marketing value. I mean, it's something that's unlike any other motorsport in the world, obviously. It's the fastest one out there, and it's the coolest one in my opinion. So it's really just, making it work for both parties, and we've been in talks, like I said, with a few companies, and we think we can make it work. So yeah, just stay tuned for some announcements, possibly, hopefully here in the near future.
You mentioned, kind of to throw a different kind of question at you off of this. You mentioned earlier you really enjoyed fan interactions. Is there some way that you think that you could put together, do you put this in your sponsorship package of interesting in ways to get those fan interactions, to pair it with the sponsorship to make something different happen, to kind of show them the value of what you could provide? Like,
Yeah.
special
Yeah,
fan interactions.
yeah. No, we put that in for sure. I mean, drag racing in the NHRA, we offer the best fan interaction in the sport. You can come right up to the ropes and talk to me. So that's something that we use. I think everybody uses in all their sponsor proposals, is the fact that these fans and people can come up and see your brand face to face and talk to me. So that's definitely something we use, and it definitely works to our benefit. And that's why drag racing is, in my opinion, the best motorsport in the world.
One of the awesome things I think the NHRA has done is, they had Nitro School, and now they've expanded that to Pro Mod, Pro Stock Bike, and Pro Stock School. Have you had a chance to participate in that yet?
I have not yet, but maybe in the future, hopefully in the future I will. But yeah, I think that's a great idea. I mean, to educate the fans on just exactly how, intricate all the vehicles are, all the machines are at the track. Just and the work that's put in and the thought that's put into every single one. I mean, I think it provides the depth to the sport that it needs, and I think it interests especially a car guy, car guy, car girl, working on their car in their garage. It interests them and it fascinates them even more, and it makes them love the sport.
Well, yeah, that, the walking tour and just all the stuff, the way that you guys are able to, and the NHRA started to interact with the fans more. I don't think they get enough credit for that, because I've seen, again, from the media perspective, see these tours go on and what they do, and you get to see the personality of some of these racers come out and the way that they get to answer these questions. You don't get that. And I don't think people realize you don't get that in any other motorsport, period.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I realize that. I mean, I've been to a few NASCAR races recently, and I've never met a driver yet. I have yet to meet a driver. So, you come to a race, you could meet me. Anybody can meet me, and I'm more than happy to talk to you. So that's the biggest difference between, I don't want to, pin ourselves against NASCAR or whatever it is, but it's true. I mean, you can come up to me and talk to me. You could talk to my Uncle Bob. You could talk to my crew chiefs. You could talk to anybody on my crew and learn about anything you want to. So that's something about going, that ties back into getting people out to the race. If you get people in the gates to watch the race, they could talk to me, they could talk to anybody, and they get to see how cool it is.
It was at Norwalk a couple years ago. I was walking through the pit shooting pictures, and one of the coolest things I saw was one of the alcohol drivers. I can't remember who it was. They were packing their parachute, and there's this little kid that was just fascinated with what they were doing. And I remember, I'm snapping pictures of it, and the driver looks at me and goes, "What, do you want to help?" And you would have thought that that kid hit the lottery. He sat there and helped that driver pack those chutes and put that together. And that right there, those kind of things, doing that stuff right there is what makes Total Fans for Life.
100%. I mean, I've had a few experiences like that already too. I mean, I've offered to, I like to have fun, like I said, and anybody watching me, I'll talk to and invite to join me. And, I've had people help me. I've given, given out, pilot shoots and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a whole lot of fun, and I love the kids. You should see the looks on their face when they look at you, and they realize sometimes the kids don't know who you are yet, and then their parents have to tell the kids that I'm the driver, and they look at you like, they look at you with wide eyes and hope, basically look at me with some hope. So it's really cool. I'm very humbled to be in this position, and I love it.
In my office here at home, growing up, my grandfather had a connection with Don Prudhomme via a crew chief that my grandfather, was a teacher, had in school. So whenever we got to go to the NHRA races here in Columbus, we'd always, when Bobby Brantner was a crew chief, we get to hang out and, say hi, and I got to talk with Don Prudhomme when I was a kid, and, that was absolutely amazing. Well, one of the coolest things ever was he went to fire the car up one time, and we were standing there, and I got just blasted with fuel, started crying and freaking out. Bobby and Don gave me the set of spark plugs out of the car, and I actually have those in my office here somewhere at home to this day. And it's stuff like
that. See, you're an example yourself. Exactly.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, my mom has started giving me a lot of this stuff growing up around racing that, when I was a kid, we had to make, a book, and I made a book about, how to be a race car driver. And it's, you get it ingrained in you, and you ingrain it in these kids, and they turn out like us. They're in the media, they're, driving a bracket car, they're at their local track on a Saturday night. They might be in an open trailer with a 10-second bracket car, but they're doing what they love, and they're racing. And that's what we need to really fan that fire more, I think.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, we're both examples of it, really. I mean, we grew up, going to the racetrack and having those experiences, and now, I'm driving one, and you're obviously covering the sport. So I think we, like I said, we need to get the kids out.
Yeah, getting the kids out more and getting to enjoy it. And I think the other thing that the NHRA should continue to do is, you mentioned sportsman racing, and when you get, every level of sportsman racing has an interesting flair to it. And, I'll go from sun up to sundown to check out a race. Even if I'm not covering, I just go to a national event, I want to go to see stock, super stock. I want to see it all. And I think that maybe the NHRA, to kind of help give those guys a little boost too, is maybe they should start looking at doing a sportsman school to explain the nuances and, how difficult those different forms of racing really are.
Well, yeah, I mean, with sportsman racing, they are the most accessible, let's put it that way. I mean, anybody can really, you know, anybody can really build a sportsman car if they have the money, if they have the funds, and they have the knowledge. And that's what makes sportsman racing so great, is that the people that are out there, they love the sport with all their heart, and they put all they have into their vehicles and their race cars, you know. And I think that, like I said, you get more people involved in sportsman, you get more people involved in the sport, you get more interest in the sport, and it just helps everybody at the end of the day.
And I think with social media is a good, bad thing at times, and it gives us a level to really push that message out there and expose people to different kinds of racing. And I try to do that with, you know, I like anything loud, fast, and dangerous. You know, it doesn't matter. And with drag racing and having that ability to show off what these sportsmen can do, what the pros can do, and giving a peek inside, I think that's what it's going to take to really, you know, like you were talking about earlier, to expose the sport more to people, is for us to take ownership of it and drivers to take ownership of it, you know, open those doors up a little bit and show people, even if it's just a little, I think a small quick video you could do of just a task you do as a driver in the pits, people will watch that.
Yeah, I mean, I think social media is actually can be our biggest tool. I mean, especially with our sport, it's so quick, you know. I mean, it's 4 seconds for a run. You know, one of my runs, 4 seconds. You know, the pro side guys, little, you know, miss 6 seconds. Yeah, it's an eternity for them, right? But you know, it's different. You can put those, you know, and here's the thing. You have to capture people's attention, right? And our sport can do that in a very short amount of time. So if you were to put those runs on Twitter, if you were to put them on Instagram, if you were to live stream our races on Facebook, you know, I mean, I think you can engage a whole nother crowd by doing that and using social media to help us as a resource, you know. And I think, like, you know, I've had a little idea of, you know, just put the races, put each individual run on Twitter and see how much people engage in it and are fascinated by it, and see how many people watch it, you know, ultimately. And I think anybody you put in, make an impression on social media, you can possibly get them out to the track and be lifelong fans.
Yeah, and just get them interested in watching. You know, get them to go on the NHRA YouTube channel and fall down that YouTube rabbit hole, because Lord knows I've fallen down enough YouTube rabbit holes watching. You know, I'll start out watching something. I was researching something about a story about I think it was like pulling tow rigs, and all of a sudden I'm watching videos about common rail diesel drag racing in Thailand, and it's, you know, stuff
okay.
Like that was my, I first saw that, I'm like, all right, what's this all about? And I see these little, basically like Isuzu trucks, tube chassis with crazy powerful, you know, diesel engines making rips down the track. It was the most gnarly thing I've ever seen, and I've just fell down that rabbit hole via the NHRA, you know, YouTube page or another racing YouTube page. What's not to say that you don't do that? And, you know, the opposite way that people fall into that.
Right. Yeah. You don't do it in reverse. Right. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, that sounds interesting. I might have to look into that, huh? That's pretty crazy.
Oh, it's nuts. Like these trucks, I found another video of, I started following them on Facebook of all things, and they race them on, like road courses, and they look like mini trucks. They're spewing diesel, and they're nasty little vehicles. I wish, you know, I could, you know, speak the language and get a little bit more info on them, because they put all, again, it comes back to that putting your heart and soul into something. And these are really awesome builds that these guys are doing over in another country. And it all started because of what we do here in the United States.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But see, like you said, I mean, our sport can influence, it can influence so many people of all different kinds. So I think, you know, that's crazy. That's crazy you found that. You might have to shoot me that link over after this interview.
Oh, it's wild for sure. And you fall into that, then you fall into, you know, with what's going on in the Middle East right now. And they just had that big, you know, global auto deal in Saudi Arabia, and how much drag racing has absolutely exploded over there now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're growing as a sport, and that's why I feel like now getting into it as a young man, that I think the best is yet to come for our sport, and I can't wait to see it happen, and I can't wait to participate in it.
You know, if you were given the opportunity, what would be your thoughts on, you know, I thought I'd read somewhere that they were starting to build a drag strip in China. You know, China approaches you as a country and says, we want to grow this as a national sport. We're going to ship you and your car over here to make some runs. Are you in and out? You know, what would you think of being able to do something like that?
1,000% yes. I mean, if you look at, here's the thing, the biggest, we're the fastest motorsport in the world. Well, the biggest motorsport in the world is F1, right? Formula One. And they are on a global scale. Obviously, they spend a lot more money than we do, but part of the reason why they're so big is they hit every continent. You know, I mean, they're in everybody's life. You know, I mean, the entire world loves F1 because they go everywhere. So if a place like China, I mean, was building a drag tour, they wanted me to go over there, why not? I would also, you know, Australia is big in drag racing.
Oh, it's nice.
I would love to go to Australia. Love to go to Europe. You know, I know Urs Urbacher. I'm a big fan of him. I've met him a few times. We're buddies, and I'd love to go to Europe and run. And I would like to. Like I said, my goal in this is to broaden the sport and get it in front of more people. So if I can, you know, jump over some ponds a little bit and go to other countries and stuff and race there, I would be more than happy to do it.
If you want to go race down under with nitro cars, go hit up Cameron. You know, he told the story about how he kind of like literally on one phone call and a week later, he's in Australia, you know, racing a nitro car. You know, that's wild.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know the Rapisardas down there, and I know Ashley Sanford pretty well. Yeah, I got to get my butt down there and try that one time.
I've said, and I still need to find someone brave enough or dumb enough to fund this to me to get to spend like I was told that there's like a month in Australia part of the year where there's like multiple events you could hit up where it's like big drag races. Then they've got that stuff where they've got, you know, the burnout contests and they've got jamboree. They've got all these events like back to back to back. I would love to just go there for a month and just hang out in Australia for a month and hit all of these events to like kind of create something like, you know, Anthony Bourdain, no reservation style where it's like, all right, I'm just going to go hang out and take in this racing culture for a month. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people do that, you know, and people do that. And that's why, and that's how they fall in love with sport and they continue to do it. So I would obviously love to do that too. I think it's a great idea and maybe we should do it together.
Yeah, definitely. Get some funding for that. You know, it comes back to social media and whatnot. We could have a lot of fun with that. You know, just take a couple cameras and just goof around for a month in Australia and see who's brave enough to let us toss his keys to a race car and see what happens, right?
Yeah, I'd be down for sure.
And if, you know, kind of, you know, look at other cool stuff, if you ever get a chance to check out this, I'm going to pump these guys because I've written a lot of articles about what they do. Check out the YouTube channel Full Boost in Australia. They do some awesome videos and they show off some of the craziest, like, rides that they have down there, and it shows how much variety they have in Australia when it comes to drag racing.
Yeah, it's really big down there, and I obviously would love to experience it. So if I ever got the opportunity to go down there, I would hop on a flight tomorrow.
Oh, it's crazy because like their order of operations is, it doesn't matter if it's a two-door or a four-door car, they're going to make it a race car. Can they fit a V8 in it? Well, they can't fit a V8 in it. All right, well, what kind of, can we put a 2JZ in it? All right, the 2J isn't going to fit. Can we put a rotary or like a little 4G deal? And they're all turbocharged and they're all stupid fast. It's nuts to watch.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. No, I believe it. I would love to go down and check that out for sure.
Well, our time here on the Drag Zine podcast is coming to an end, and I like to give my guests their opportunity to do their best John Force impersonation and plug sponsors and where they're at and what's going on. So I will turn the floor over to you, Jordan, so you can let people know about what you got going on and where they can find you out on social media.
Hey, well, I mean, I guess you can find me on social media on Instagram at Jordan Vandergriff, on Twitter, JT Vandergriff, and on Facebook, Jordan Vandergriff Racing. But for me, I mean, all I have to say is if you're listening to this and you don't know me or you just now hearing about me, come out and meet me. I mean, come out to a racetrack, see what drag racing is all about. I'd love to talk to you. Love to get to meet you and show you what I love to do. And other than that, I mean, we're working on some stuff to get me out there next year. So, any fan, any new fan, bring your kids, bring anybody out to meet me. And I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to get to know you and I look forward to next year, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It was my first time on Drag Zine, so I look forward to doing it again with you as well.
Well, Jordan, thanks for coming on, and we definitely look forward to seeing you out next year, and if I get a chance, I'll try to catch you at PRI.
All right, sounds good. I will see you there.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Jordan for stopping by, and as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your wind lights bright. Until next week, folks.